AP Radio News. Good morning, I'm Ed Donahue. Later today, President Obama speaks at another memorial service following a mass shooting. This time, it's a lot closer to home. The AP Sagar Magani reports the president will speak about the victims of the D.C. Naval Yard shooting.
It's being held at the Marine Barracks, Washington, a more than two-century-old landmark about a quarter mile from the shooting scene. The president and first lady are due to visit with the families of victims later today before the president and other dignitaries speak at the memorial.
The president made another push for stricter gun control measures last night in a speech before the Congressional Black Caucus.
And finally, we can't rest until all of our children can go to school or walk down the street free from the fear that they will be struck down by a stray bullet.
Legislation calling for expanded background checks failed to clear the Senate earlier this year. The hostage standoff is not over at a mall in Nairobi, Kenya. At least 59 people have died. Gunfire can still be heard. The AP's Jason Strayuso reports many people have made it safely out of the mall.
In an attempt to accentuate the positive, Kenyan security officials did say that more than 1,000 people were safely rescued, were safely ushered out of the mall after the attack began.
Citing police in Kenya, the Red Cross says 49 people are reported missing. Two suicide bombers detonated their explosives outside a historic church in Pakistan, killing more than 60 people in the deadliest ever attack on the country's Christian minority. A wing of the Pakistani Taliban is claiming responsibility, and they say they'll continue to target non-Muslims until the U.S. stops drone attacks in Pakistan's remote tribal region. A car and a pickup truck collided in north of Los Angeles. Four young people were killed, three others in the hospital in critical condition. Sergeant Tom Lackey with the California Highway Patrol spoke to KNBC.
At least half of the fatal victims' seatbelts were not in use.
A firefighter at the scene said the dead appear to be in their late teens and early 20s. This is AP Radio News. Several highways are open again in flooded areas of Colorado.
Colorado transportation crews have cleaned up, repaired, and reopened eight highways, including an interstate, making it a bit easier for people to get around. A stretch of U.S. Highway 34 in the hard-hit Loveland area should be reopened soon. Officials say they will soon select emergency contractors to make at least temporary repairs to a number of mountain highways and roadways washed away by the flash floods. I'm Tim McGuire.
And weather conditions have not improved in parts of Mexico. That's a helicopter flying over flood damage throughout Mexico. The overall death toll from storms Manuel and Ingrid over the past week rose to 101. A police helicopter crashed in Mexico while helping to rescue storm victims near Acapulco. Officials say all aboard died, but they can't confirm how many were aboard. A landslide has buried half of a remote town. I'm Ed Donahue, AP Radio News.
The third annual Defense and Security Mobile Symposium is November 22nd at the Capitol Hilton. Brought to you by AFSCIA DC, this year's theme is Beyond PIM, the business case for mobile as the next platform for innovation, transformation, productivity, and the mission. It will explore the need, use cases, and leaps forward that are possible with mobile. With leaders from DISA, NSA, DOD, DHS, the IC, and the major services, plus a competition for companies to present their mobile technologies. To register, visit afsciadc.org/mobile.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Do you miss the joy of reading because of blindness or disability? Here's great news about Choice Magazine Listening, a free talking magazine. You'll hear outstanding articles and stories chosen from leading publications such as The New Yorker, National Geographic, Smithsonian, Time, Sports Illustrated, and many more. Please call 1-888-7-CHOICE or on the web, www.choicemagazinelistening.org.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Colin Callahan, with Colin Callahan and Associates. Today's show is brought to you by Cressa, the Tenants Advantage. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today. We start with Eddie Snyder, partner and chairman, Snyder Cohn; John Quackenboss, president, L&Q International; Pete Metzger, vice chairman, CT Partners; and finally, Doug Smith, CEO, Osius Networks. Kicking us off is Eddie Snyder. Eddie, what is Snyder Cohn?
Snyder Cohn is a CPA and trusted advisory firm.
How big or small is it today?
We're 70 people.
And you're accountants, but you do more than accounting.
Yes, we help clients in a variety of ways. We are supporting their life cycle of success, so we actually work with clients all the way from their startup through growth, and we also have an affiliation with an M&A advisor to help them with their exit.
And you have a good story to tell. You have been with this firm a very long time. When did you start working with Snyder Cohn?
I started working when I was 13.
At this company?
At this company.
And you've been at this company your entire career?
I have. There was a two-year... Well, first of all, I went through high school and I went through college, but I've been working summers continuously since I was 13, so that's over 50 years. And after college, I taught for 2 years in a D.C. public school, and then was able to start my full-time career at Snyder Cohn at that time.
And what were Mom and Dad doing when you were young?
Well, my father started the firm in 1927, so we're celebrating our 86th year.
He's Snyder.
He's the Snyder. He passed away almost 30 years ago, but he certainly set good traditions for the rest of us. And my mother was helping him in making sure that my brother and my sister and I were properly raised and fed and given the kind of love and life examples that she gave, as well as being known as the best cook in Washington, D.C.
Is she still the best cook in Washington, D.C.?
Well, she doesn't cook, but she is with us, and we still love her and enjoy her at age 98.
So whose idea was it for you to join the firm at 13 years old?
Mine.
It was your idea.
Yes, I had been bored the previous couple of summers, and I wanted to follow in my brother's example. My brother worked in the firm. Did work 60 years before he retired, and then last year, unfortunately, passed away. But when he was 13, he started in the firm and then started his full-time career at age 18. And I wanted to have a chance to work in the firm at age 13.
So how many brothers and sisters?
One brother, one sister.
Okay, and you, your older brother. What was it like not only living but working in the shadow of your older brother almost your entire career?
Not only did I work in his shadow, I worked in his office. It was a real small office, I learned what I learned a lot from him as well as from my father in terms of how to deal with clients and associates.
And what did you learn from them that you carry forward?
I learned caring and putting your clients and as well as the associates who work with us ahead of our own interests. I learned honesty. I learned acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about acceptance.
My father taught to me as he would drive me to elementary school down 16th Street. Right. And one day I remember the story, and I suspect I heard it more than once, of his friend Lou, who knew him when he was in a teenager, early 20s, before he started the firm, when he used to work with the government. And he said to me, "Do you think I like everything that Lou does?" "Impossible, but he's my friend, and it's okay what he does." And I learned from his model and from his words how to look at people's different perspectives that they bring to the table and to work with them and accept every person.
So how does that show up in your business today? How do you bring that forward in your business?
Well, I work with people of all sorts, and I try to help everyone. And in helping people, you can't help without communication, and you can't communicate if you can't know their perspective and where they're coming from. And to accept things that may seem a little bit off, but from where they're coming from is the right thing for them. And once we learn to accept where people are coming from, we can really help consult them.
You know, a lot of accountants love the numbers, but I hear you talking about other things you love. What's your favorite part of the business that you do today?
My favorite part is helping people with their businesses in all aspects of it.
Like what?
Well, it's last month I worked on helping a client acquire a business. He needed a very large loan to do it. I got him the loan with the bank that I had brought him to many years earlier, made a case, and the bank bought it, and it's a successful acquisition already. I'm helping another client right now consider selling her business, and I, a few months ago, helped a client look at the business in a very hard way. It was going down, and I helped advise the client a successful 40% reduction in their total wages. And as a result of that, I was able to get them a loan to continue with the business, and they've turned profitable now, and they're thriving.
So it sounds like, for you, business success isn't just about making a lot of money. It's about helping people.
Oh, it's all about that. And part of that is the tax planning and the numbers and making sure that we all look at the metrics that one needs to look at to run a successful business. But it's also helping people understand those things.
And it sounds like you also got that not only from your father, but from your mother as well.
That's right. She's very much a caring person and was always giving and is always giving, even at her age now.
You told us a great story about something she discovered when your father passed away. Would you share that with us?
Sure. She asked me if I would like this book. Well, what was the book? The book was my father's 1932, what we used to call daytimer.
It was
his diary.
And appointments.
It had all his appointments. It had at the end of the book where he took money in and what he spent his money on. And I said, I'd love to. And knowing that's the year they got married, and growing up with my father as the romantic in the Depression, meaning the next day after the wedding, he was at work. That's the first page I turned to. First, the wedding date on August 14th. And I saw that they were married, and he mentioned the rabbi's name, etc. But I turned to the next page, and sure enough, he didn't mention the name of the clients because of confidentiality, but he had the initials of who he saw the day after the wedding and the days after that during the Depression.
So are you as romantic as your father?
Well, I actually should ask my wife that question.
Okay, maybe we'll have her on next time. We can ask her that. You give to a lot of charities. What is it about giving to charities that's so important for business people?
It's helping people in all sorts of ways. I actually am privileged not just with charities, but with people out of work, with people starting a business that are not necessarily appropriate for our firm. They may not be in town or whatever. And I actually get paid to help people, whether the firm gets paid or not. So it's really a wonderful life that I live. And with charities, because I've been on so many charitable boards and people ask me to join them when I can, I try to convey some experiences I've had to help them if I believe in their cause.
Does it go the other way when you're supporting and, you know, working with a charity? Do you learn things that you can bring into your business?
All the time.
Like what?
Like when people don't look at their business, because we, in our firm, we do entrepreneurs, but we also look at our nonprofit clients, charities and associations, as businesses. So when successful business people on boards of charity don't look at the charity as a business, and they start showing off how much they know, I take that back to my firm and to my clients and the people who work in our firm about how it's important to always look for what the ultimate goal is.
Did you have influential mentors growing up?
Certainly. In addition to my father and my brother, I had lots of partners who I learned from and continue to learn from today, as well as I learned from anybody I can learn from, whether it's our associates in the office, our clients, people we meet in business associations, and it's always important and, to me, joyful to learn from people.
So I'm thinking that your career trajectory is very interesting. You went from being the 13-year-old summer intern to having mentors who were partners to being a partner and then, you know, being in charge of the firm, including some of these partners who had mentored you, probably. What was that transition through your life and through your career like? Were there hard times when you had to manage people who had managed you?
There are certainly some hard times when you're dealing with people, whether they were mentors or not. But by and large, in looking out for where the next person's coming from, I've had a very blessed life and had a chance to work with people, whether it's different people progress at different rates, different people have different goals, and working with each of them in what's important to them is what I try to do.
You told us when you started at 13 you were sorting checks and bills and putting things in order, so it was kind of the organizational part of the job. How young were you when you realized that you liked the consulting part of it and really how things worked?
I can't say exactly, but I had exposure to that, as people in our firm do, at a fairly early age. Mm-hmm. So it certainly was fairly early on. My initial bent was mostly on making things work and balance and being understanding of all the elements that make up a tax return and an audit and everything else that I was doing. But in our firm, since we don't work with public companies, we work with privately held companies, everyone is working with the client, with their controller. Mm-hmm. And as I had the privilege of doing that and working on some clients, in fact, that my father had done and others had worked with, I learned what their business was all about and became fascinated with business.
What inspires you today? What gets you out of bed and going into the office?
In addition to the things that I've mentioned, I have a wonderful role of helping others in our firm who are younger than me, which is most everybody, to learn what I have learned in life and to help people progress in their own careers and to mentor others in serving clients better.
Great. What's the website?
The website is www.snydercone.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Dave Parikh, BusinessWise CPA. Dave, what is BusinessWise CPA?
BusinessWise CPA is an outsourced financial accounting and management consulting firm. We act as trusted advisors to our clients and replace their in-house CFOs or provide them additional expertise during their growth or exit or any other challenges that a company is undergoing.
And what makes your organization special?
Our organization truly becomes our clients' partners. We don't charge clients on an hourly basis. We provide them a fixed fee engagement, and essentially we act as a part of their team, being there for them whenever they need us and delivering results.
And what do clients appreciate about BusinessWise CPA?
They appreciate the fact that we're results-oriented and that we're always there for them. I can't stress enough the importance of being there for them when they need us.
So what does your perfect client need?
A perfect client need is a transition, whether it be growth, whether it be them wanting to diversify or get acquired or acquire another firm.
What do you enjoy most about your work?
What I enjoy is being making a difference, rather, in our client's business, to helping them get from where they are to where they want to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
Are you truly confident you've assembled the strongest team to work with you on your business? For example, an attorney who successfully handled your type of problem, an accountant who sees the big picture, a business advisor who gets it, a real estate broker who thoroughly knows the market, a commercial insurance broker who has access to all the products, an employee benefits guru who mitigates future costs, a wealth manager who works with you to make work optional, an understandable information technology wizard, a commercial banker with minimal covenants, an investment banker who knows that business is a relationship, a staffing specialist to build a team, even a confidential peer group with whom to compare notes. Simply listen to executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com to confidently select the business leader who serves business leaders, because nobody has interviewed more business leaders from Princeton through Northern Virginia than Executive Leaders Radio. You'll have confidence in your choice and ultimate selection of business leaders who serve business leaders.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Colin Callahan of Colin Callahan & Associates. Next up, we have John Quackenboss, President, L&Q International. John, what is L&Q International?
L&Q International is a small company based in Alexandria, Virginia, and Memphis, Tennessee, that deals with advanced soil solutions. And by that, we have polymers and enzymes that treat dust for dust control, as well as harden and waterproof soils for infrastructure development.
And how big or small is the firm today?
We're only 10 people, and that includes contractors as well as stockholders. We've been around for about 5 years, and during that time we've been testing a variety of these polymers and how they react, and so we are just really getting to market now.
And you founded this business.
I founded it with my partner Earl Lockwood, who this year passed away, unfortunately. Dennis Stone, our vice president, and I are the two main people in the firm right now, with a variety of others.
So what's it like to be a Q that loses your L? Is it hard to run a business by yourself after you start
a firm?
Well,
he was a dear friend, and he was also a very bright guy. It was unfortunate, but it was expected for over a year. It wasn't very sudden.
Is it hard for you to run a business on your own now?
No, not so much. I had been doing this for a number of years and had been in various entrepreneurial endeavors over the last 40 years.
Are you a serial entrepreneur?
I am. And if something succeeds, typically it gets sold. And if it fails, then I end up having to take a job with a major corporation and make some money and then start back again.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Evanston, Illinois, and moved for a very short while to West Virginia, where there was Island Creek Coal Company. And then from there, we moved to Rome, Italy, where my father was, he was with Booz Allen Hamilton in the early days with Mr. Booz. And we went to Italy so that he could help Enrico Mattei start Ente Nazionale Idrocarburi, which is ENI, the Italian oil firm. From there we went to Turkey, and then when we returned after 10 years, I landed in Memphis. So I say that I hail from Memphis.
So you were an international child.
Of sorts, yeah. There are people that have spent longer periods over there through all their high school years as well. But yeah, I came back in about ninth grade.
Were you a serial entrepreneur in each of those countries?
I was a little young for that.
What did you learn from that moving all over the place kind of background that you used to help you be successful in business today?
Well, I think you manage to acclimate yourself to a lot of different types of people. In situations, you get into countries where you don't understand the language, but you have to make out what you need to do, and you learn to communicate quickly.
Is communication important in business?
Very much so, yeah. And it happens every day. You have to let your people know what is expected, where you are going, what needs to be done, and give the confidence that it's going to happen.
So how young were you when you first started working, all this traveling around, and then when did you start working?
I guess my first job was as a commissioned salesman for the Fuller Brush Company.
How old were you when you started doing that?
I was 15 years old.
Wow, and what was that like?
It was door-to-door on foot. And showing wares. Of course, I had never done any selling before, but it didn't seem to bother me one bit. And I earned commissions of approximately $15 a week, which in 1968, I guess, was a pretty good sum of money.
And whose idea was it to get the job?
This was probably my parents' idea, telling me that I needed to get out of the house and do something
constructive,
substantial. Yes.
You know, I have a vision of the Fuller Brush
man knocking on doors and getting doors slammed in his face all the time. Is that what it was like?
Oftentimes, yeah. Other times, people were happy to go on and see you because they knew the Fuller Brush name.
So they let you in because they wanted the product. But what's it like at 15 years old to get that much rejection?
Well, you really, I mean, they would listen to the pitch, for Pete's sake, because you're 15 years old.
That played to your advantage.
Exactly. And then did you have to learn to deal with rejection?
Well, it just, it basically is not something that you have to learn to deal with great difficulty. It just sort of happens. You inure yourself, and before you know it, it just doesn't bother you very much.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a matter of timing and sticking with it.
That's right.
And what do you take away from that experience as a foundational experience that shows up in your success today?
Well, I think that persistence is a big part of anybody's success.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we would not have made it all the way through the tests and trials if we had not been persistent with the formulations and trying different products and figuring out where they would be applicable for roads and waterproofing and things. And they're myriad. There are a myriad number of different solutions that you can have mm-hmm. with soils for assisting.
So, and you said you were a serial entrepreneur. What kinds of business has it always been? Scientific?
No. Let's see. I ended up when I went to college. You know, I worked construction for my brother when I was going through high school during summers and also after college, during college and after college. But then I ended up going into the paper industry with a brand new paper mill. Now, I was just a junior purchasing agent and then went into the mill. But after that, I ended up going to some doing business school. I never got an MBA, but ended up going into architectural art antiques, to farming. I had a small entrepreneurial manufacturing plant
uh-huh.
with two shifts running light wood products for the fan industry.
And you said you were about 28 when you did that. So
that was
fairly young.
That was the first substantial company that I had started from scratch, and we had probably 35 employees, and were manufacturing for Hunter fans and for Old Jacksonville fans, which went broke under Bethlehem Steel, if you remember them.
So with all that diversity of business experience, what really is the key to success for business? What's common among all those experiences as being successful?
You have to have a combination of persistence, a very good idea, a clear definition of where you're going with it, and you have to have some luck.
Luck counts.
And you have to have some financial backing.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had three and three. I had one full sister, and I had three half-brothers and two half-sisters.
Did you all grow up together?
From time to time we were together, but they were 8 and 10 years older than I. And so they were actually in college when I was going through school.
So what... You weren't the oldest. Were you the youngest?
Second to the youngest.
Second
I had a sister
youngest.
5 years younger than I.
So it was kind of a yours, mine, and ours kind of a
That's
family.
Right. A Brady Bunch uh-huh. situation.
And what did you learn from your siblings that you carry forward today?
I think I learned a lot about persistence from my older brother, Ronnie,
mm-hmm.
That I worked construction for.
Mm-hmm.
And to not show favoritism, he would give me the worst jobs to do on the construction site. You dare not quit until they were finished.
What would he do to you if you quit?
He could get angry. it was so much that he was stronger than I was. I think I was actually stronger than he, but
he
just didn't
temper.
Want to endure his wrath.
What would your brothers and sisters say you were like as a kid?
I have no idea. I really don't know. I think one time they said, "Oh, he's a good guy," and that's as much as I got out of him.
Not too much trouble.
Description.
Finishes his work.
Were you more like your mother or your father?
I would say it's about 50-50. My father was an engineer, mechanical engineer, and he took an interest in a huge variety, wide variety of subjects, and my mother was an artist. She was a sculptor, and then later on, a painter. But
so you're 50-50. What's your artistic side? We see where the engineering side shows up.
Well, I think she showed a lot of creativity and had different ideas about how to make things work and approach things and from different angles. And my father was, in many respects, very, you know, more methodical, but could handle complexity, and he had an adventurous streak through him.
If your father were here today, sitting right here, would he be surprised? Would he tell us he's surprised at your success?
No, I don't think so, because all of his children pretty much did well and did different entrepreneurial things. I mean, even my brother, who's a doctor, works for himself.
What's the website?
www.l-q-international.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be right back after this Business Spotlight.
Are you really confident you've assembled the strongest team to work with you on your business? For example, an attorney who has successfully handled your type of problem, an accountant who sees the big picture, a business advisor who gets it, a real estate broker who really knows the market, a commercial insurance broker who really has access to all the different insurance products, an employee benefits guru who really helps mitigate future costs, a wealth manager who works with you to make work optional, an understandable information technology wizard, a commercial banker with minimal covenants, an investment banker who believes business is a relationship, not a transaction, a staffing specialist who can really help you build the team, even a confidential peer group with whom to compare notes. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com, that's executiveleadersradio.com, to confidently select a business leader who serves business leaders to help you, because nobody's interviewed more business leaders from Princeton through Northern Virginia than Executive Leaders Radio. So you'll have confidence in your choice of a business leader to help you in your business, in your ultimate selection of this business leader. This business leader can include your attorney, an accountant, a business advisor, a real estate professional, a commercial insurance agent, an employee benefits specialist, a wealth manager, an information technology guru, a commercial banker, an investment banker, a staffing specialist, a collection agency, even a CEO club. Save yourself grief, time, and money. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. So you can listen and learn from the most highly respected professionals. executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Next up, we have Pete Metzger, Vice Chairman of CT Partners. Pete, what is CT Partners?
CT Partners is a global executive search firm. We're about 500 people in 27 cities around the world, and we help our clients build world-class leadership teams.
So you're a real networker.
I'm a real networker. It's what we do. We network and have relationships.
But you didn't start your career doing recruiting and networking.
I did not start my career doing recruiting and networking. I started my career as a U.S. Marine officer.
Were you brought up to always be a Marine, or was this?
No, in fact, well, my father was a Marine, and I knew at a very early age I wanted to do something in public service, and I was very taken by the look of Marines and what I thought Marines did. My father would try to dissuade me mightily by saying it's not all uniforms and flags. It's pretty tough out there, and I found that out very quickly.
That's really interesting. He tried to talk you out of it?
Yes, he said, unless you're absolutely convinced, his words were, you can't be happy doing something else, don't do this.
And you did it anyway.
And I did it anyway.
how old were you when you decided you wanted to be a Marine?
I joined the Marine Corps my 18th birthday.
And but you said you decided to be a Marine earlier.
Oh, I decided to be a Marine when I was my earliest memories were wanting to be a Marine, wanting to be around Marines, wanting to be a Marine, absolutely.
You told a story in the green room about cleaning out your basement. You found something in the basement.
Yeah, this past weekend, I was looking through some old documents and some old records, and I found an autobiography I wrote when I was in sixth grade here in Arlington County. And it was a year-long project, and it was titled, I titled mine, Diary of a Devil Pup, instead of a devil's dog, which meant a young, and I said very clearly, I want to be a Marine, I want to be a Marine officer, and I knew fairly early on what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Have you always had that kind of clear vision about your life?
In fact, during my career in the Marine Corps, I loved every minute of it, and so I stayed and kept getting more interesting and more satisfying jobs and think I was doing something meaningful for the country. But I do have a sense of what I want to do and how to do it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up, I was born in Washington, D.C. I spent some time on the East Coast and on the West Coast, and early in my grammar school years, we lived in London, England, right downtown by Marble Arch. Subsequently lived in Japan, in Tokyo, and went to some of my schooling there. And so I had a very early perspective on global things and kind of how to get along in different places.
So what skills did you pick up moving all over the place, not only as a kid but as an adult, that you use in your business today?
I think if any one thing kind of comes to my mind, it's adaptability. Mm-hmm. How to, you know, when you're a new kid in a class in school every year or two, you have to kind of figure out how to get along. Maintaining one's own values and principles, but kind of how to do it. And so adaptability. And I've always had a real interest in global and international things. I've lived all over the world. I've studied foreign languages. It also led me to my career, sub-career, as an intelligence officer as well.
So you've had multiple careers within your...
Well, as a Marine officer, I was fortunate enough to be assigned in lots of places. I was not only in the field with Marines in the infantry, at sea and deployed, but also had chances to work. I was assigned in the White House for 3 years as the military assistant to the President of the United States, and I was responsible for carrying what's popularly known as the football. I worked for Ronald Reagan.
So I have to ask you a question. Since there are so few people on the planet that have ever carried the football, mm-hmm. what did you learn about yourself in that experience?
Well, I learned the enormity of responsibility that not only the President has, but those who are entrusted with significant actions and decisiveness in difficult and stressful situations.
In these kind of jobs that you've had, have you ever doubted yourself?
Well, I suppose it would be unfair to say never, but rarely. Mm-hmm. You have to have a certain amount of self-confidence in those kinds of roles, should I say.
How young were you when that kind of core self-confidence showed up?
Well, I mean, I think going through recruit training when I was 18 years old, I had to have a sense of who I was and what I could do. And I just made up my mind that nothing was going to stop me. Mm-hmm. I just knew I could do it.
What did you learn from your mom that you carry forward in your business today?
My mom, God rest her soul, was a very gracious person. She didn't work outside the home. She raised my brothers and me. She had a real knack with people. Mm-hmm. She knew how to get along with people. She was a physically beautiful woman, a great entertainer, a great hostess. And whatever small modicum of social grace I have, I probably got from my mother, and certainly my wife, too.
And how about your dad?
Well, my father was a fairly regulated guy. Mm-hmm. He was a career Marine officer. He had very strong values and a real sense of self-discipline and not wavering when you have a mission to do.
You said something really interesting. You said many interesting things, but earlier in the green room, you called Vietnam a fascinating experience. Why did you choose that word?
Well, because it's hard to find the right word. I mean, for the period leading up to my service in Vietnam, every single minute I was in Vietnam, I was terrified. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely terrified. But I, in retrospect, I was 22. I set my sails with that kind of experience. I led men in difficult situations. We had many awful experiences, and yet when I came home, I figured, I think I was 23 at the time, there wasn't much I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. I'd lived through that.
Mm-hmm. And I have to believe that as a veteran, you see a lot of young men and women coming back with that kind of experience.
I certainly do, and I'm helping as many people as I can, from Fortune 50 companies to smaller companies, connect with veterans, because there's no finer workforce in the world.
Excellent. You also told us that you escorted Queen Elizabeth for a time, so you've had some very unique experiences in the Marines.
Yeah, that was more glamorous than we've talked about. I was in the White House as the Marine aide to the President, and the Chief of Staff, Mr. Baker, assigned me to be Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip's escort for 10 days on the Royal Yacht Britannia during their West Coast tour. And so I met up with the Queen on the yacht my first day, and the next I was billeted in one of the officer rooms on the yacht. And the next morning, I went down to breakfast, not knowing what to expect. I was a Marine major, and there was Her Majesty and Prince Philip having breakfast and asked me to join him at the table. So that was a pretty neat experience.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, what was it that you think that your superior saw in you to take, you know, a guy out of the mud in Vietnam and end up working for the President and the Queen?
Well, I was very lucky. I suppose in life, performance counts. And in my first line of work in uniform, there's no substitute for doing things well and doing things right. I didn't say perfectly, but performance counts, and I was very lucky. It's a long process, but I was lucky to have those responsibilities.
How did those kind of experiences shape you?
Well, they certainly did give me a sense of responsibility. I keep coming back to that word, that if any task is worth doing, it's worth doing 100% of what you got. And it made me realize, I had, fortunately, a global vision because of my experiences at an early age. And so I learned how to think broadly, how to maintain initiative, and how to be not afraid to respectfully speak up when it's time to say something you think is a good idea.
I'm curious, you come back to the concept of responsibility, which is clearly important to a Marine. You've now been in the work world, you said, for
18 years.
18 years. So how does responsibility work there? Is it as important?
I think it's as important. It's less defined.
What does that mean?
Well, when I got out of the Marine Corps, people said, Pete, you're going to have a great time, but no one's in charge out here.
And is it true?
Well, whether or not, in my current firm, I couldn't say that. It's a sense that you either have or you don't, and being accountable for who you are and every word you say and every action you take is something that I've found in business. The whatever small successes I've had, the clients we work with understand that I understand that. I'm not going to let them down. There's very little margin for error, and we're going to get this thing right, whatever it is.
You sound like integrity is very important to you, too.
Well, you either have it or you don't. There's no gradients of it, yes.
What does success mean to you now?
Well, success, I guess in early age, I thought, you know, success meant, money and things. Where I am in my life now, I think success means those you care about around you caring about you, and having a sense of belonging to something that's more important than you are.
Mm-hmm. What inspires you every day?
Well, I'm inspired by a lot of things. I'm still very physically active in terms of a rigorous exercise routine. I'm inspired by the people around me who have had less opportunities than I have, who are doing very well. I'm inspired by my children, by my grandchildren, by my partners, and by my colleagues. And I'm motivated to never let them down.
What do you think your legacy will be?
Well, that's a really tough question. I hope it'll be he did what he did well.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that was.
When you started your career as a Marine, your dad said you'd be sure. Was he aware of your success through the ranks?
Yes.
And if he were here today, what would he say?
I think he would say that Pete did well.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of faith in me.
Yeah.
How about Mom? Would she be surprised at your success?
No. No.
They always knew it.
I think so.
What's the website?
Our website is www.ctnet.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment after this business spotlight.
This is Dana Theus, and this is your Business Spotlight. What's your name?
Heidi Webb.
And what's your company?
My company is Cornerstone Montgomery.
What makes your organization special?
Cornerstone Montgomery is the leading provider, nonprofit provider of mental health services in Montgomery County, Maryland, and we take a multifaceted approach to serving each individual client. We serve about 2,500 people throughout Montgomery County, Maryland. So we don't just look at this client needs medication, we look at they also need therapy. We don't look at that they just need nursing, they need nutritious meals, they don't just need recreational outlets, they need a plan for their life.
So what does your perfect client look like?
Our perfect client is someone who is ready to recover their lives after being diagnosed with a severe mental illness. And I think what makes us unique, Cornerstone Montgomery, is that we look at the person, not the illness. So same with diabetes or heart disease. You don't look at them as the disease. They are not the disease. They're the human being behind it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what is it that really distinguishes you from your competition?
I think we focus, again, Cornerstone Montgomery focuses on the human. We don't say, hey, you have a mental illness, how do we work around it? We say, okay, we get it, you have a mental illness. What are your plans for your life?
Got it. What do you enjoy about your work?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm not on the front line for this organization, but as the Director of Development and Organizational Advancement, I'm the person fueling the mission. I'm the person going out into the public and discussing what it is we do. So fulfilling is helping all of these people.
And what's the website?
The website is www, of course, Cornerstone, spelled Cornerstone, Montgomery, all spelled out. It's a long one, folks, .org.
Thank you. This is Dana Theus, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Next up, we have Doug Smith, CEO of Osseous Networks. Doug, what is Osseous Networks?
Osseous Networks is the leader in Defense Department and Public Safety tactical broadband wireless systems. So think Android tablets and devices on the battlefield. Specialized apps, encryption.
And how big or small is it today?
We're 150 people today and growing.
That's a big firm.
It is. Yeah, it's 10 years old. It's 2003.
And you founded the firm.
I did.
Was this your first try at entrepreneurship?
It's my third.
Your third.
It's my third, and I think it's the most successful. I'm very excited by the prospects for the company, and it's a great bunch of people.
Did you grow up always wanting to be an entrepreneur?
I didn't. You know, my dad was a big company guy at Pillsbury, and this was, I don't know where it came from. You know, I think watching it in the mid-90s and in my early 30s, I thought of some better ways to do some things. And I thought, well.
So where did you grow up?
Oklahoma, the panhandle of Oklahoma. If you know where the nearest major city, which is 25,000 people, is Enid, Oklahoma, but north and northwest of there.
Not a whole lot out there.
Wheat and oil and cattle. And that's about it.
And Dad was working for Pillsbury.
Right.
What was Mom doing?
Mom was raising five kids. She was full-time busy. You know, I actually remember, I'm old enough to remember when she had to do a lot of the wash almost by hand, you know, before the first machines came out. And that was a lot of work for a lady back then.
Five kids. Where were you in the pecking order?
I was second. I have an older brother as well. There's three brothers and two sisters.
Aha. Uh-huh. So what did being the second son mean for you?
Well, you know, a little bit of a sense of humor, but my older brother was great. I mean, almost the perfect son. No trouble for my parents at all. So I decided to test the opposite end of the spectrum.
Uh-huh. So you weren't the perfect child?
Not at all. No, my mother would definitely not say that.
So how young were you when you first realized that you could do things a better way?
You know, I was it was early. I mean, it's, you know, Panhandle of Oklahoma. You know, it's a very small town. My graduating class was 19 people. Not a lot of opportunities for different subjects. And early on, my parents just had high school degrees. But early on, my parents saw I got bored pretty easy, and I had a lot of things I wanted to learn. So I taught myself. You know, they were ordering textbooks from colleges when I was 15. Uh-huh. I taught myself Russian, designed helicopters, these sorts of things at night.
You also described yourself as a rebel without a cause. And I'm wondering, what does a rebel without a cause look like as a kid in the panhandle of...
Just like I look now with blonde hair, without a shaved head. But But besides that, you know, he's you know, there's not a lot to do out there. I started working on ranches and with farmers at 13, 14 years old with cattle and chores. But, you know, there's not a lot. You know, there's no video games back then. Pong wasn't invented, and we were allowed to watch TV anyway. So you found challenges, and most of them probably the adults would rather you not be doing.
Does being a troublemaker pay off in your career today, being a troublemaker as a kid sometimes?
You know, the only way you can be an entrepreneur is to be willing to break everybody else's rules. Because, you know, there's an established ecosystem of companies and markets. They all, you know, they all believe they have it all carved up and are doing it the right way. And so if you're going to do things a new way, you're breaking a lot of other, you're tripping over a lot of apple carts.
So being a troublemaker maybe came in handy when
it
came to...
I think it did. It finally paid off.
Now, you said that you've had three businesses. Were they all wildly successful?
No, it wasn't. My first one was wildly successful. It was in the mid-90s in Dallas, Texas. And for the venture capital investors, it was a 20-to-1 return, which is a huge out-of-the-park success. My second one was after 2000, early in the decade, and right during the perfect telecoms equipment company, doing wireless gear, right when the telecom equipment industry melted down in 2002, 2003.
Ooh, bad timing.
So we invested $30 million of folks' money, and ended up having to shut it down. So it was an extremely, that type of failure you take personally. It was It was tough.
What did you learn from that failure that you carry forward?
Well, one of the things I learned is on the first one, which was a wild success, you don't always understand why something's successful or why something's failure. I'm sure you've heard this from other entrepreneurs. Sometimes it's luck. There's always an element of luck and timing. Mm-hmm. And the first one went so fast and went so well, and we were just hitting. The technology hit, and the clients hit, and the big contracts hit, and then a big company came in and bought the company. So you're never quite sure why you're successful. Now, when you're failing, you sleepless nights are every night, and you're racking your brain trying to figure out how to save the company and how to save all the jobs and employees and the $30 million your investors put in, and how to find an exit for the business or a new plan, and you just learn so much more the hard way, mm-hmm. hard knocks, but you learn a lot.
Like what?
That you can't control everything. Uh-huh. You know, the biggest thing I've learned is you cannot control the outcome of everything. and you think you can. When you've had one success, you think it's all because you were smart and so forth, but you can't control the outcome. So the telecom industry melted down, shrunk by almost two-thirds in those 2 years, and we had to shut it down. And a couple years later, I had a new idea. So that's what we're doing today.
As an entrepreneur, what were you most surprised about as you started your first company?
Well, with the first company?
Mm-hmm.
The first one went so fast. You know, mm-hmm. the big surprise was how fast it went. Mm-hmm. It was 2 years, and we sold the company for $420 million.
Wow.
So it was just, when things are happening that fast, you don't even have time to consider what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you're fighting fires, all the things you have to do in a startup, building a company. And, that just went so fast. You know, so I had a little time to think about it in later years, and I realized, there's just a lot of luck and timing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And just as bad luck or bad timing in the telecom meltdown in the second one, well, you can't help that either.
Yeah.
This time, I think, the third venture, Osius Networks, here in D.C., is, wireless technology for the DOD and public safety. And it just happens to be the right thing at the right time, and we're the leader in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel very fortunate.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
You know, that's a really good question. I'd say, in some ways, neither. In some ways, my dad was a do-the-right-thing guy, no matter what the cost to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got that from him.
Mm-hmm.
Take the hard path if it's the right path. My mother is very smart, quiet, but extremely intelligent. I think I got that from her.
So I'm interested in doing the right thing, even if it's the hard thing. Is that an important quality to have in business?
I believe it is. Yeah, I believe it is. And, of course, others. You know, there's a lot of vilification of CEOs that goes on in the press these last years, which is not very pleasant to hear. So I know that there are, and we all see it in the press, because it is big press, when you see a CEO doing the wrong things. But I think the successful ones that I know do the right things,
mm-hmm.
even when it is hard, and personally hard.
What are some hard things you've done?
Well, sometimes you've had to... shutting down that second company, I had to make a lot of hard decisions, including writing off everything I had in the company.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just the right thing to do. Rather than, we had an option to go raise another round of equity and try and put another $30 or $40 million into it, but I just didn't see the path for it. which made all everything I'd worked for in it go away as well.
Mm-hmm. Does it make this success all the sweeter?
It does, you know, and a part of it, I think, is, you know, I'm 53 years old. I think a part of it is growing up yourself. You know, the first one, I was 38, and, you know, in some ways, particularly a male, not to be sexist, but we're not fully grown up at 38.
Oh, really?
I'm still trying to get grown up now at 53. But today, you appreciate it a lot more, and I think it's kind of like, you know, men that have babies, you know, at a later age, and it's not me. But I think the ones that do it talk about being a better father. I think I'm a better leader today.
Mm-hmm. What is characteristic of your leadership style?
Respect. You know, my personal contribution, probably the thing I'm strongest at, is I tend to see big patterns in technology and what can be done and can't be done, you know, before most other people do. Mm-hmm. That's kind of been in terms of leadership style and the inside, I set that direction, you know, the strategy and the vision. But then I treat everybody the same. I don't care if it's someone shining my shoes or you know, everybody. And I got that from my dad. He treated everybody the same. And I treat all employees with respect, you know, all the time.
How does that pay off for you in your business?
I have a great company. I mean, I have great people. And I don't have to be a micromanager, and I'm not. Because
if you respect people, they do a good job?
They respect you. They innovate. They take risks because they know you've got their back when risks don't always go well, as I've learned myself. And so you don't have to be the micromanager.
And you don't have to yell at them.
And you don't have to yell. I'm definitely not a yeller. Yeah.
So what inspires you today?
Oh, a lot of things inspire me. But I think, you know, for OCS Networks, it's one of those situations where we know we're saving lives, you know, and I think that's an overused phrase in this industry, but you know, you can just, common sense tells you, if you've got a tablet in the battlefield and you're seeing high definition video streaming to it from an overhead UAV that shows where the bad guys are, where the bombs are on the road, you know, lives are being saved, and we're the, you know, we're the first and the leader in that industry doing that, and that feels really good.
Mm-hmm. What about mentors? What kind of mentors have you had that have really helped you achieve the kind of success you have today?
You know, I was a very young engineer, and I just started at Ericsson. I think I was employee number 43 at Ericsson back in the mid 1980s in the United States. And, you know, today Ericsson is the wireless technology leader, the main provider to AT&T and Verizon and so forth. And I had a man, you know, and I was 24 years old, and they were desperately looking for a new manager to build a group of 18 engineers and meet an impossible time schedule. And I had an executive there, a Swede named Gunnar Eriksson, that believed in me. It took a big risk, a fly with this 24-year-old. And, you know, just seeing, because I knew what a risk he was taking. And he took it, and I really admired him for that. And it set me on a path of wanting to deliver for guys like that.
What's the website?
OCSNetworks.com.
OCSNetworks.com. This is your host, Dana Theis. I'd like to thank our guests today, Eddie Snyder, partner and chairman of Snyder Cohn, John Quackenboss, president, L&Q International, Pete Metzger, vice chairman, ZT Partners, and Doug Smith, CEO, OCS Networks. I'd also like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan of Colin Callahan & Associates, for helping me structure the interviews, hopefully providing you with an educational and entertaining show. Thanks to our sponsor, Cressa, The Tenant's Advantage. And finally, thanks to you, our listening audience, for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can also listen to this program again at businesstalkradio.net. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of
of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio.